Kiddush Club podcast, everybody. We are coming to you this week on Zoom because our illustrious producer, he's under the weather.
I am under the weather. You'll have to excuse the voice. Do I sound okay? I don't know. Am I okay?
To me, you don't sound any worse than usual.
Wow. That's a nice way of putting it. So I don't sound great usually, and I'm not worse this week.
Where is your at-home COVID tests?
I don't have one. I know you have thousands. Could you spare one for me, please? I don't want to spend $30 in Walgreens.
I would, but I don't really want to come in contact with you. I will leave it at a dead drop if that's what you prefer.
So you're going to make a sick man go out to get the COVID test. But let me ask you a question. Why should I take a COVID test? Just remind me. Why am I taking it?
I don't know. I took it. It was positive. By the way, there's a thrill to it. Somehow there's a thrill to it.
We talked about it.
I feel like a chemist with the drops and the, you know. Yep. I feel like a pharmacist.
But other than that, is there any reason for me to know if I have COVID or not?
No.
I mean, stay away from old people.
Better not to know. It's not like you're going out. You're not a social butterfly anyway.
Wow, so. The hits keep coming from you. Did I offend you this weekend? Where is this coming from?
I don't know. Maybe it'll come out. Like, this is therapeutic.
tell me, please. When did you first harboring these feelings of resentment towards me?
But before we go any further, I do want to remind people that if they enjoy this podcast, they should subscribe to it, leave us a review. 5-star reviews on Spotify and Apple help our podcast grow.
So I think that you have Elena LeShabeach syndrome. That's what you have.
I don't know what that is.
So at the end of every single one of our casts, you have the outro where you tell people to subscribe and leave us a review. And I feel like you feel like some people are just ending it and not listening to you say that. And so you, like Yom Kippur, you want to say it at the beginning of the cast. Am I right?
By the way, that's the best sushtel you have ever made on this podcast.
Thank you.
And that was just on the spot.
On the spot. This is not prepared.
That's great.
This is ad lib, baby. I'll take that. I'll take the praise.
You get the credit. The you do.
Wow. And by the way, and I'll add to what you said, absolutely subscribe. But don't just subscribe. Buy us a coffee. Buymeacoffee.com/Kiddush Club or go to our website, kiddushclubpodcast.com. You guys, we need your help to be able to continue producing. We have to come up with the content. We have to do the production of the audio. We have to keep the website going. We have to keep the social media. We got to do the artwork. All of this stuff costs money. We need your help. Buy us a coffee. By the way, are you prepared for the eclipse?
I know that it's coming, but I keep avoiding buying those glasses that I see at every supermarket.
You're so cheap.
I feel like I'm going to use it for 10 seconds and then move along.
That is correct. Okay, so you can't spend the $3 that it costs?
They want $9.99.
No, so buy it on Amazon. You could get 10 of them for $9.99 on Amazon.
You're right. I'm going to do it today.
You know, we need a psychiatrist to come onto this show, okay? We need a psychiatrist that can listen and give commentary. For example, I tell you, you're ready for the eclipse. You say you keep seeing the glasses and you ignore them. The second I went into 7-Eleven, I saw the eclipse glasses there. And this was before it was even in the news. I looked at it. I was like, oh my. I grabbed them. Like, my brain couldn't focus on anything else. No Slurpees, no nothing. Eclipse. Holy cow. Stop everything. You see those same glasses and you're like, yeah, I don't know.
$10. Like, you know what it is? I'm just more Jewish than you.
That's what it is.
I'm looking for things that can obstruct the view enough. You know what I'm saying? I'm looking for household items that can protect my eyes so that, like, I don't have to go out and spend that money.
Right. Yeah, but just don't do what Trump did. You remember Trump?
What did he do?
He was having the press conference and the eclipse was happening. And he just looked right up without glasses and everyone's like, no, don't look.
You know what? People don't realize that will damage your eyes.
Absolutely.
In the long term. Like, if you decide, I'm just going to look.
You could burn your retinas, literally burn your
retinas. And not even know it. You not even know. It's not going to hurt. That's what's so scary about it.
Yes.
You'll be looking up. It won't hurt. 20 minutes later, I can't see a thing.
It reminded me years ago, a friend of mine, he actually reminded me that we did this years and years ago during an eclipse.
What year was it? We had one of these full solar eclipses. What year was it? I believe, if I'm going to guess, it was 2011.
Let's ask Google. It was in 2017.
Really? So yeah. I'm like, Way off.
You're not that excited, apparently. The whole thing doesn't excite you. Wait, so
I love the fact that it's going to get dark in the day. Like, I'm that guy. You know, when the storm clouds roll in and the whole place gets dark, that's where I thrive. I think it's a reflection of my soul.
Are you a vampire? What's this? You're a vampire.
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it's that dark feeling, and I love it. I'm going to be here for it.
Wait a second. Forget my story for a second. Isn't it a Gemara that solar eclipses are a good sign for Jews?
No. I think...
Yes, yes. A lunar eclipse is bad for the Jews.
Right, but I don't think that...
Right, we're compared to the moon.
I don't think the solar means that it's good for us. It's just not... Like, we're just not in this parsha.
No, I think you're wrong.
It's not always about us. You know what I mean?
It always is. Okay, so a quick check online. The Gemara says it's actually a bad omen for the entire world. Okay.
Yeah,
No, I'll keep reading. More particularly, a solar eclipse is a bad omen for the Gentile nations, while a lunar eclipse is a bad omen for the enemies of Israel, which is a euphemism for the Jewish people. So I was right. A solar eclipse, it's bad omen for the world, but specifically for the Goyim, not for us.
But again, you were not right, because it is not. It doesn't portend any meaning for Jewish people, period. Well, it's just, we're not about, it's not about us right
now. If Esav goes down, Yaakov goes up, right?
Okay, this is like, already
making... Yeah, I'm in Mashkiach mode, yes.
I'm sorry, I'm going to reject this. It is not a good sign for the Jewish people, but like, we should just sit tight and lay low.
Okay, but so you're not going anywhere to see the lunar eclipse. You're not going to upstate New York.
No, I'm not going to go anywhere. I am going to go outside.
Yeah, well, of course. I'm debating if I should go upstate. And Canada's already warning that they're worried about the huge influx of people at the Niagara Falls area.
Saw that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, wait a minute. If they're saying that, I should be going there.
Okay, so you don't strike me as the person that's going to just like be where the crowds are.
That's a good point. But I do want a great spot to see it. And by the way, you could go online and see the map of where the eclipse goes. We'll include a link to it. One of the websites that tells you is preventblindness.org, believe it or not. Apropos, right?
So, I mean, yeah. People, like I said, people really don't realize what a risk it is.
100%. 100%.
So get the protective headgear. Do not be like me. Don't be cheap.
Just buy
it. Spend the money. I'm going to actually do it today. I'm going to find something on Amazon.
You don't have to. I bought six of them on Amazon. I'll give you one for free.
But I think I have to also give one to my kids.
Ah, okay, fine.
Because it's going to be like, you know, let them be carrying this thing. Let them have some responsibility for their vision and like, you know, take it serious.
I hear that. Okay, before we continue, we have a whole bunch of shout outs. So first of all, we were interviewed once again by Hanala from The Weekly Squeeze. That's her podcast. If you haven't checked her out, check it out. Weekly Squeeze with Hanala. We're going to include a link to it in our show notes. We were interviewed on it, and we were just basically sharing ideas of what's been going on in Israel and the world in general. Kind of like what we do here, just another podcast.
Always a great time to be on the Weekly Squeeze. And just so you know, it's the episode titled Off With Her Head, Conversation with Kiddush Club Podcast. And if you want to know whose head we're talking about, tune in.
Yes, you'll have to figure it out once you listen. Okay, also we have a shout out going to Shua and Chana Berkowitz from Chabad of Contra Costa. Do you know what Contra Costa is?
I really don't know where Contra Costa is, but I have a feeling you're going to tell me.
So it sounds really like exotic, right?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing that I thought was Cosa Nostra, which is a famous
mafia,
right? But it's not. It's a county in California. So,
yeah. I was hoping for like an island.
Me too.
I thought it was going to be an island.
Yeah, maybe it is, and there's another one, but this one seems to be in California. Also, happy birthday for Moshe Wolf from Muncie. Happy birthday, Moshe.
Yes. Happy birthday and many more.
Also, shout out to Shlemi Brach. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Okay, so moving on. So this is a new one, okay? We've been asked to mention that there is a Jewish movie that's being produced in the Baltimore area. And when I saw this, I was like, I'm in. I am in. Put me down.
Yeah, the only problem is that this is a movie for women by women.
Oh, yes. So we are out.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do not qualify. But if you're interested, if you always had this dream of being in like a serious production for a movie, a Jewish movie for women, by women, etc., check out our show notes. It's way too many contacts for us to say on the air. Check out the show notes. We're going to include links for the texts, the WhatsApps, and the emails. The deadline for auditions is April 10th. So you got to get moving. You got to get moving right away. You got to contact them. If you're in the Baltimore area and you are of the female persuasion, they're looking for you. Here's your big break to be a star.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like being a true Jewish celebrity. You have to send in a video audition of yourself for a chance to be in this movie. And there's a bunch of roles. So look at the roles. We'll have, I don't know how we're going to put this out. How are we going to put all these roles out? I don't know. Like, how are we going to get this information out?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're going to put all the roles, but we are going to put links to
So it'll be an email address, yeah. And they'll probably tell you the roles that they need.
Yeah, they're going to be filming it in late July through November of this year. So you want to get moving. Time's running out. If you want to be part of it, get in touch with them. Okay, now on to the rest of the show. I want to lead off. We meant to cover this in last week's podcast, and we just ran out of time. I want to lead off with this clip. This is Merrick Garland talking about a lawsuit being brought by the United States Department of Justice against Apple, and some commentary from my own political Rebbe, Ben Shapiro. Here it is.
And as any iPhone user who has ever seen a green text message or received a tiny, grainy video can attest, Apple's anti-competitive conduct also includes making it more difficult for iPhone users to message with users of non-Apple products. It does this by diminishing the functionality of its own messaging app and by diminishing the functionality of third-party messaging apps. By doing so, Apple knowingly and deliberately degrades quality, privacy, and security for its users. For example, if an iPhone user messages a non-iPhone user in Apple Messages, the text appears not only as a green bubble, but incorporates limited functionality. The conversation is not encrypted, videos are pixelated and grainy, and users cannot edit messages or see typing indicators. As a result, iPhone users perceive rival smartphones as being lower quality because the experience of messaging friends and family who do not own iPhones is worse.
Wait, so you mean that Apple doesn't want to subsidize Android? That's what he's saying right there. He's saying Apple doesn't want to do cryptography for messages with Android. And if Android wants to upgrade its own abilities, then it should upgrade its own abilities. Is that a monopoly problem? Yeah, like who's the crowd for this? This is like the big headline. So what happened? Apple stock gets hit. You know how much Apple stock is being held by 401ks right now by teacher?
So it happens to be that I love this. I mean, I don't love Merrick Garland. He gets under my skin. But
why? I don't know. But
whatever. I don't know. He just doesn't look like my kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Okay.
But that aside, I don't like it when you, Chevra, chime in to the texts with your green bubbles.
You're talking about me.
Yeah, I'm talking exactly about you, because whenever there's an iMessage group, you're the guy with the green bubble, and I don't like it.
But you know what? I'm very happy that you're blaming Apple and not blaming me. Most people blame me, and they yell at me about the green bubble. You're saying, I acknowledge it's not your fault, it's Apple's fault.
Well, here's the part that bothers me
the worst.
Oh,
here we go.
What bothers me the most is when you send, like, let's say somebody sends like this big Mazel Tov, or they're sending like an invitation to their bris.
Oh, I know where you're going. Yep.
Right? So it goes to 20 people on an iMessage group. Then people will start replying Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. And then sometimes the Android users will show up as a separate, as a separate thread. Yeah. And it's like all of a sudden I'm getting this weird text from a random 917 number saying, Mazel Tov, I'm so happy for you. I'm like, who are you?
And what, why are, like, you wishing me a Mazel Tov? What did I ask?
What do you want from me? What is this about? Until I realized that, like, this is from this big Mazel Tov chat. Yeah. Which is why, in general, I can't stand iMessage. And I lean more towards WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Because it's more clear for me.
So I'm happy you said all that. So here's one of the rare occasions where I vehemently disagree with my political Rebbe Ben Shapiro, and I think he's totally wrong. So he's against the fact that the Department of Justice is bringing this case against Apple. And one of the things he mentions in the clip is that, oh, so because Apple's supposed to develop encryption for Google so that they could encrypt, because iMessage is encrypted and text messages are not. Okay, so he's clearly uninformed. Me being an Android user and a staunch anti-Apple person, as you know, I will say that Google developed the technology called RCS, and they offered it to Apple for free and said, hey, Apple, why don't you protect your users and stop defaulting to SMS, which is insecure, and use this protocol that we developed for free and just incorporate it into iMessage so that your users, when they talk to Android users, it's not unencrypted. And Apple's like, no, we're not going to do that. And then we also know from the leaks that Apple specifically said they weren't doing it because they wanted to specifically force Android people to move to Apple because of the green bubbles. So this has nothing to do with Apple not wanting to spend money on encryption. Google did all the work. All Apple has to do is include it, which Apple finally said they would do, but it was only after months and months of pressure and them knowing that the EU was coming after them, that the US government was coming after them. So I think this is overdue. Power to Merrick Garland. I'm very happy that he's doing this. And Apple, the tyranny of Apple must come to an end.
Well, maybe iMessage will actually be useful for a change after this, you know, after this takes effect.
Yes. Once they do this, by the way, there's going to be typing indicators between Android and iPhone. Media that's sent from iPhone and Android back and forth is not going to be reduced in quality. The groups, you're not going to get the random group text. Basically, it's going to be like iMessage. Of course, Apple in true Apple form is going to keep it green, of course, but at least you'll be getting most of the features of iMessage.
Really?
Yes.
You know, I also heavily rely on encryption because if my text messages got out, okay,
I would Hashem like, help you.
Nobody would speak to me.
Challenge accepted. That's my new project, bro. I'm going to get you text messages.
Come on.
That I know that they're unencrypted.
Let them be. Just let them pass.
Okay, so let's, now that we're covering last week's news a little bit, I mean, we do have to mention that massive bridge collapse.
Oh, that was terrifying.
And yeah, speaking of Baltimore.
It happened like the day after we record, so we couldn't really
cover it.
Right, obviously. But it's terrifying to see.
It's terrifying to see, and it's even more terrifying for me because you know what happens when I see a story like this.
Yeah, but it's not only you. I have begun looking both ways before crossing a bridge.
Really?
Yeah. No, I'm seriously now scanning the waterways before I get on any major
serious?
Bridge. Yeah.
And if you see a cargo ship, you're like, I'm just going to pull over. Wait a little while.
Maybe we make a U-turn right here. But, you know, you also start to wonder, could this happen to the Verrazano?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. Well, actually, I'm not glad, but there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that says there's a whole bunch of other bridges across the United States that are just as vulnerable as the Francis Scott Key Bridge, including, among them, the Verrazano Narrows Bridge.
Come on.
Oh, yes. And the George Washington Bridge that connects New York and New Jersey. Those are two bridges. Verrazano is one of the longest bridges in the United States. Suspension Bridge connects New York to, it connects Brooklyn to Staten Island. The George Washington Bridge connects Manhattan to New Jersey. And they are susceptible. How does that make you feel now?
If I'm being honest, when I saw the Francis Scott Bridge, you look at that bridge and you say, it's a little flimsy. I could see how a cargo ship can take it out.
Okay.
When you look at the Verrazano, though, you look at it's a solid piece. It's like a solid piece of work.
At least like, you'd think so.
Right. Like when I look at the Brooklyn Bridge, same.
Yes.
Right? It's like bricks in like all the way down to the seabed.
Yes.
So, you know, I feel like it could handle that. But Francis Scott, that never had a chance.
Okay, well, you can argue with the Wall Street Journal, bro, but I'm just telling you what they say.
Also, it's a little bit infuriating that they didn't stop traffic going onto that bridge. Like, you knew.
No, they did.
But there were still people that fell.
There were people, but the crew members of the cargo ship actually warned that they had lost control and they were able to stop people. It would have been way worse if they didn't send that warning. So they were heroes.
So how come there were six people that were still unaccounted for? And I assume that those are people that fell in with their cars.
They aren't. The people that were unaccounted for were workers who were unfortunately working on the bridge. It's very sad. Yeah, very, very sad. And they're still unaccounted for.
Which means, obviously, that they didn't make it, but...
No, I mean, maybe they swam somewhere and we just don't know where they are yet. Let's be positive.
No, I mean, look, if somebody was looking to vanish, that's the perfect cover.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? It's like you just swim to shore and be like, you know what? I'm starting a new life.
Start fresh. The best tweet I saw about this, and we're not really making fun, it's just... We're making fun of the politics of it all, okay? So don't...
Yeah, keep telling yourself that.
Stop with the hate mail. Okay, so somebody set up a Twitter account called the Francis Scott Key Bridge, right? As if it's the bridge tweeting. Mm-hmm. And they dated it for the day before, and they wrote, I have information that could lead to the arrest and imprisonment of Hillary Clinton.
I saw that, by the way, and it's still funny.
Oh, it's great. It's so good. But anyway, we hope for everybody's safe return. And we hope that nothing like this should ever happen again. But I mean, since we're on the topic of, you know, potential natural disasters, I mean, this is not really a natural disaster, but, you know, we do have to cover the airlines. We have to. We have no choice.
Yeah, don't worry about it. You do you.
Why do I always feel so self-conscious about it?
Because a lot of feedback comes in.
That's what it is, right? We get the hate mail. So first of all, again, two more stories on United Airlines. A United Airlines flight leaving Germany had to turn back when their sewage tank on the plane was overflowing into the main cabin. Passengers on board said there was a foul smell that filled the entire cabining on the Boeing 777. By the way, it was a Boeing flight. And they were forced to turn around. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, I get it. But you know when you're on the plane, well, at least me, when I'm on the plane, I want to get to my destination. I'm not sure I would have wanted the plane to turn around at that point. I would assume that I'd probably get used to the smell and just get me home.
Listen to me, bro. There is raw sewage sloshing up and down the aisles.
So you disagree with me on this one?
Unless you're going to be holding your knees to your chest for the remainder of the flight. This is not a thing.
Well, I don't think it was several inches high, right? I assume it wasn't completely terrible, right? How much sewage could be in this? They had just taken off, right? So it couldn't have been that bad.
There are 300 people on board, you understand? Once right. All of them had Wiener Schnitzel before. that was complimentary.
So I hear that.
There was quite a bit. I was surprised. There was quite a bit.
So you're all for turning back.
Yeah, come on. I can't, like, not only that, if you're on that flight, that's it. You're going to be speaking about that forever. Every single flight is going to conjure memories of of raw sewage up and down the aisles.
You're going to have PTSD, raw sewage PTSD.
Yeah, and that's the worst type of PTSD, I'll have you know.
If you were going to pick one PTSD, that's the last one. Right. And then also, another United flight. You can't make this up. What's going on with United? What is going on with United? I don't know.
Where is their stock? That's all I need to know. Between United and Boeing, like, I need to take all of those out of my portfolio.
Yeah, yes. Do it now. A United flight was diverted to Stewart Airport. I never even heard of Stewart Airport. And this was a flight coming from Tel Aviv. So it was going from Tel Aviv to Newark. And it hit such bad turbulence coming into Newark that seven people, after it landed, so Baruch Hashem landed safely, seven people were taken to the hospital because of injuries that they got during the flight. Now, I saw that and I was like, wow, you know, the turbulence was so bad that people got injured. These are Jews coming from Tel Aviv. And then I watched this clip and I want to share it with you and then we could talk about it. Here it is.
Well, Mike, commercial airplanes are built to withstand severe turbulence, but the problem is passengers' stomachs are not. And United Flight 85 was not a fun ride tonight.
How bad a flight does it have to be happy to get to Newark Airport?
How bad was the turbulence?
Oh, that was like really like six flight.
Pretty bad, it turns out, after a routine flight from Tel Aviv became a roller coaster.
So like I was imagining people on stretchers, you know, with serious injuries. And then this guy is like, yeah, suddenly it was like I was at Six Flags. I'm like, what? That was the fear? Because it was like a roller coaster?
I love how he invoked Six Flags.
Yeah, because the article says that they were taken to the hospital for motion sickness. Like that was the big... Only Jews, by the way, need to be taken to a hospital for motion sickness.
I fight in Lebanon 2 times, but I can't do a Batman ride. This I cannot do. I mean, but the truth is...
These are the toughest soldiers on Earth, bro. How is this possible?
Wait a second. You can't really speak. You are Mr. Airline Phobia. You cannot yes. make fun of them. If this happened to you, you would never fly again, period.
Okay, so I will admit that one of the people in the article said that they were taken to the hospital for chest pains. And you
yeah,
know,
anxiety.
Yes,
that's anxiety.
That's what they said it was. And you know who that was.
You would have a long recovery after such a flight. I really hope this never happens to you, Mir Tashem.
Amen. No, you are correct, but I still think it's funny because I think if it wasn't a plane of Jews, they wouldn't have had to take so many people to the hospital.
It's true, and especially Hasidim, by the way, they have a lot higher tolerance for this type of things.
Oh, is that true?
You know what I'm saying? Like, please, you call this... I've seen mikveh waves bigger than this. You understand? It's nothing. Just sit in your seat. Relax. Relax.
I think you're right, by the way. I can't imagine a Hasidish guy getting scared. It's more the Yaki type guy, you know, like me, getting nervous.
Yeah, Israeli people, you know, they're always thinking, you know, what could happen next?
100%. So speaking of Israel, a major story in the news was that Israel bombed this building next to the Iranian embassy and took out a major Quds Force commander, Iranian Quds Force commander named Mohammad Reza Zahadi. And to me... on the one hand, this is an elimination of a terrible, horrible terrorist person. But on the other hand, I mean, this is right next door to the Iranian embassy in another country. Now, the Iranian embassy is considered, as we've mentioned, I think it was 2 episodes ago, the Iranian embassy in Syria is Iranian territory. If you bomb the embassy, you are bombing Iran proper. And Israel did it anyway, which is like pretty scary stuff, no?
I think from the get-go... Iran didn't want anything to do with this. Like, I know that they had a hand in planning it, or allegedly so. They had a hand in planning it. But once the Palestinians, once Hamas took this on their own, Iran was like, you know what? We have nothing to gain except problems.
Okay,
so
but...
So they put this at arm's length already, and now they are not going to bother... They're not going to get involved with Israel again. I think they're going to let this slide.
I don't think so. No way.
You know why? You know why? Because Israel has its artillery out. It's like they're flexing their muscles now. Like, don't mess right now.
Okay, and you think Iran's just going to look the other way?
I think that they're going to be delayed, and I think that they're going to... You know how Trump talks about how Iran had to hit back? A show, something where it has to happen, but I really think that it's not the time. They know it's not the time to strike now.
Okay, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. And also coming out of Israel, this is an interesting one. So the Israeli Knesset passed a law that allows the government to temporarily ban foreign news networks from operating in the country if they're deemed harmful to national security, and the law is called the Al Jazeera Law.
Oh, I love how they're not even hiding who they're targeting with this law, the Al Jazeera law,
yes.
You know, and I'm sure that the people at Al Jazeera don't think that they have much bias.
Right. They try to make believe that they're just a regular news source. Like, no, we're just like everybody else, Al Jazeera.
I don't know why the Zionist enemy has banned us. The horrible, horrible regime of the occupation. Why they are banning us?
Right, because ridiculous. They're totally unbiased, right?
you can't even make this stuff up.
No, it's insane. Also, I mean, this is not coming out of Israel, but it pertains to October 7th. A guy named Ali Mahmoud, who's a photojournalist, he received the highest honor in photojournalism when his photo that he took won the award for Photo of the Year. The Reynolds Journalism Institute gave him Photo of the Year, and it's horrible. The photo that they gave Photo of the Year to, I'm sure you've seen it. We all saw it. It happened right after the 7th. It's a picture of a pickup truck with a bunch of Hamas people in it and a clearly lifeless body of a woman in the back that Israel later determined was one of the victims, Shani Luke, and they awarded this picture of the year. And I mean, if that doesn't make your blood boil, I'll just read you Honest Reporting's response. So the Associated Press, who he worked for, posted this like proudly on their social media, like, ha ha, Associated Press, we won the award. And now from our perspective, first of all, it's clear that this guy who took this picture was in cahoots with Hamas, right? That's pretty obvious.
Yeah, nobody could mobilize that quickly. I don't care who you are. I don't care how dedicated of a photojournalist you are. There is no way you got down to the south of Israel by the Gaza border. You just happened to be there snapping pictures and won Photo of the Year. Come on.
Impossible. But, you know, people are saying, you know, the other side. So Honest Reporting, I was saying, they wrote, congratulations to the Associated Press for winning a Picture of the Year award. How does it feel to do so on the back of a Palestinian photojournalist who infiltrated Israel on October 7th and took photos like the one below of Shani Luke's dead body in Hamas pickup? And, you know, what bothers me is there's so many people saying, look, freedom of the press, number one. Number two, photos of the year sometimes depict things that generate a tremendous emotional response. But I'm all for freedom of speech and freedom of the press. But like we said, these guys were in league with them. They were in cahoots. Like, who are we fooling here?
Even if you're not a Jew, even if you have nothing to do with October 7th or Israel, you should be offended by this photograph. And for it to win Photograph of the Year, to me, is appalling. And it's just lowering the standard of what we accept as human beings.
I agree. Absolutely. In positive news, BB's surgery went well. He's good. He had hernia surgery. We wish him well.
I feel like I didn't know that this was coming. You know what I'm saying? And also, like, what is he lifting that's getting him?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he has people. Like, I don't have as many people. Yeah, he's got a lot of people.
Maybe not. Maybe the prime minister. You know, remember, you know, the president of the United States is president of 400 million people. The prime minister of Israel is only, you know, prime minister of, let's say, you know, 8 million people. Maybe he doesn't have people to lift those heavy boxes for him.
Please, we take good care of him.
And you know what else is coming out? We're about to mention that also another head of state, which came out of his medical situation, was King Charles. He came out to celebrate the holiday of Easter. And so he's looking well, and we wish him well, as we have in the past. But to just on that topic, you know, at this time, you know, when there's Christian holidays, one of my things that irk me so much is it's not enough that, like, you have all of these, you know, pro-Hamas people online and social media and in the news and pundits, you know, just bashing Israel, making up fake facts constantly. But there's a constant thing that they do when they talk about Yashka, right? And I'm sorry that we're going into this, but we have to go into this because now the Palestinians are taking credit and saying that Christians should really be in solidarity with Palestinians because Yashka was actually Palestinian.
Wait a second. What do you mean? We know he was Jewish.
Well, we all thought so, right? I mean, for the last 2,000 years, everybody thought so. Oh, no. Everybody was wrong. He was actually Palestinian. Just like they say, you know, the Western Wall was actually part of a mosque. And everything that was accepted for 2,000 years, no. It was actually Palestinian.
I don't think that anybody actually takes them seriously.
They do. Yes.
Who is taking this so seriously?
I'm telling you, they say it on news programs and they don't get challenged. They say it on news programs. They say it online. They write it in articles. And people are like, oh, I didn't know that. Yashka was actually Palestinian. Those Jews, they take credit for everything. They're such liars. And it's not like we're running to take credit, right? You know, it's not like we were running to take credit. But it shows you that if you could deny this, you could basically deny anything. Just say whatever you want.
Of course he was Arab. Of course, why do you think they have the Last Supper? It was before Ramadan. You understand? He was fasting. That's why. That's why the last meal, yani, before he has to make the big fast of the Ramadan.
That's what it was.
Yes, of course. Of course. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. You know who else was also Palestinian? King George. He was Palestinian. Also,
really?
Alexander the Great. He
also
was great. Why do you think he's great? Because he was Arab. Yes. Also, Louis XIV.
Oh, really? What about George Washington? Was he Palestinian?
They're not sure about George Washington, but Thomas Jefferson, 100%, is Arab. 100.
Okay, yeah. So,
they'll take credit for whoever they can.
Yes, yes. They just take it all, and they just repeat it enough times until they say, you know, that's the truth.
Until it makes it to Al Jazeera.
No, but then it goes from Al Jazeera to the UN, and then the UN says that the Western Wall is actually an Arabic historic, Palestinian historic site, not a Jewish one. It's insane.
That's why it's important for us to keep raising awareness.
We are doing Hashem's work. With such tzaddikim. Okay, and moving to the U.S., I want to play you this clip. This is from Congressman Tim Walberg, talking about the situation of the war in Gaza. Listen to this.
We spend our money to build a port for them. Yeah. It's Joe Biden's reason. We need to get humanitarian aid into Gaza. I don't think we should. I don't think any of our aid that goes to Israel to support our greatest ally, arguably maybe in the world, to defeat Hamas and Iran and Russia, and probably North Korea's in there and China too, with them and helping Hamas. We shouldn't be spending a dime on humanitarian aid. It should be like Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Get it over quick.
So just to give background, this took place in a secret town hall in Michigan. And he basically says, I mean, it doesn't sound great, but I understand what he meant, okay? What he said was it should be like Nagasaki and Hiroshima when the United States dropped atom bombs. So everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's calling for Israel to nuke Gaza. But that's not really what he's saying.
Is it though? I mean, kind of sounds like he just says, like, let's just do this swiftly, rip the Band-Aid off and be done with it.
Right, but that's what he means. No, I think he was just mimicking like what Trump said. Like he's just saying, get this done quick. No?
I don't think so. I mean, look, I'm not one to judge, but I'm actually thankful that this man doesn't wear a kippah because then we'd really be in trouble. But yeah, I think I know what he wants and I think I understand it. But unfortunately, it's not the reality or it's not practical.
I hear you. I hear you. Okay. Also, in United States Jewish news, former senator and vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman, Zichrono Livracha, has passed away after taking some sort of fall.
I saw that, and I think it was kind of unexpected, even though we haven't heard from Joe Lieberman in like a really long time.
Right, but I'm not sure our listeners even know. I mean, you know, he wore a yarmulke, he kept Shabbos, he was a very proud Jew, and he was a staunch supporter of Israel. And he was really, you know, he was definitely made a Kiddush Hashem in the way he carried himself.
Yeah, so, and Al Gore spoke at the Levaya.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He made his way. I saw pictures of, I didn't really listen. I don't know if it was a video, but I saw pictures of Al Gore speaking at the Levaya of Senator Joe Lieberman.
Wow. So former presidential candidate Al Gore spoke. He was a great man. And coming out of New York, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in New York. Things have been going viral. I mean, obviously, you know about the migrant crisis in New York. The governor has talked about it. The mayor's talked about it. There was something that went viral of women getting punched in the face. I don't know if you saw that. It was all over social media. There were women saying that they got punched in the face. People thought it was fake, but they actually caught the guy who did it. And this guy, I think he was a homeless guy. He actually had set up a GoFundMe at one point. He wanted to run for mayor. I mean, I don't know. His name is...
I mean, the more you talk, the more bizarre it gets.
Yeah. No, the whole thing is bizarre. And it was actually true. He was just randomly punching these women in the face. And like, instead of, you know, New York City really tackling these problems, they're tackling the really important problems, like making sure matzah bakeries can't use wood-fired ovens.
Yeah, I saw that as well, and I think it's going to present a problem.
So there is a politician from Staten Island who's actually introducing a bill to help exclude
matzah bakeries,
as well as other ethnic people who need, you know, even some pizzerias. But how does this make any sense? You have major issues going on in New York, but they're going after the wood fire. Like, what? I mean, we mentioned Al Gore. Like, do you think if you shut down the matzah bakeries, now global warming is going to stop?
Right. To be fair, I don't think you've ever seen these chimneys. Hello? That's a really black smoke. It's a very schwarz.
So you're on their side.
No, here's the thing, though. Like, I get it if we get a religious exemption for the matzah bakeries. Like, how long are we open? From Hanukkah to Pesach? Okay, like, we can get a religious exemption. But what other denomination would get, like, a religious exemption? Like, I don't think the Muslims bake anything that's religious in nature. I mean, you did mention pizza ovens. I don't think there's any religion.
No, so it's not religious.
Pizza.
That's ethnic, right? It's ethnic. So Italian, ethnic, you know, classic. Because it's not just about religion. It's about religion and ethnic culture.
Okay. But, like, I know that the Italians, like, they are the originators of pizza, right? Big proponents of it. However, like, they can make pizza in a regular oven as well. Like, it doesn't need to be brick fired or a brick coal oven or whatever they're having. I don't think it needs that.
No, but it tastes better.
I mean, aren't we sacrificing for the greater good?
I mean, look, you know what the taste of shmur matzah is versus machine made matzah. The shmur matzah is so much better.
Yes, but there is clearly a religious distinction. People want their handmade matzah. They want to ensure that there are no mistakes and they're not leaving it to chance of the machines or whatever.
No, but you could get machine-made shmura, right?
Some people hold that machine-made is even better than handmade because machines don't make mistakes.
Exactly.
But it's all religious, whereas the Italians and pizza, you know what I'm saying?
So I think an Italian might, you know, have something to say to you about this.
You're selling them down the river. I'd rather not get into it. Hey, yo. We got to have a talks. I don't need any of that.
Yeah, you don't. And in just random news, Adidas, you know, we covered the history of Adidas. You know, it's a German company. And Adidas now, they're making these shirts for soccer. And they will not allow users, if you want to get a custom shirt, you cannot put the number 44 on the shirt.
Wait, what's the problem with 44? Before we even get to that problem, you realize that you can't call it soccer, right?
I know. The article says football.
Yeah, this is an international podcast. You're going to have a lot of angry Europeans.
Okay,
the saying, you know, what are you saying? Why are you calling it soccer?
Valid. This is part of our sports segment. We'll make it part of our sports segment.
Have to make sure that gets included.
But yes, what we Americans call soccer and the rest of the world calls football. So yes, we'll include a picture in the WhatsApp group. And it's because if you look at the picture, take a look at it, you'll see that the number 44, it actually looks a lot like the SS logo from the Nazis.
I do understand. I see it now that you show it to me. Yes. Yeah. However, how about changing the font, Adidas?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if the font
just changes the font.
At the top, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good point.
You don't have to just eliminate an entire segment of people that want two fours next to each other. Just change the font.
I hear that.
What I'm saying?
Adidas, if you're listening, this man speaks the truth.
Yeah. Why we didn't think of this? I don't know. Where is Adolf?
Oh my gosh. Also in sports news, now that we're in the sports segment, you know, baseball is starting.
Yeah.
Don't sound so excited, bro.
I'm saying, okay, if you say it is, I believe it. But also, spring training, yes, it's the season.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've been following, but there's this Japanese player named, I hope I say it right, Shohei Ohtani. Did you see this?
So it's ringing some bells. Keep going.
He's a Japanese player. He doesn't speak the language, okay? But I think he signed one of the biggest contracts of all time, $700 million contract to play for the Dodgers, okay? And $680 million of that contract, he gets paid over time, right? So he gets, I think, $20 million now, and then he gets it over the next, whatever, 10 years. And he got into a little trouble because it seems they caught him gambling, which is a major no-no, right? You can't be in sports and be gambling, putting money.
It depends. Is he betting on football or is he betting on baseball? Like, I don't care if he bets on horse races. I don't think that should disqualify him. If he wants to put a wager down on golf, please be my guest. Well, but if he's in the game that he's betting on, that's a no-go for me.
Okay, well, here's where it gets a little crazy. So now he says that his interpreter slash best friend from the age of 18 slash guy he brought over from Japan and spends all the time with, and his ex-manager called his jelly to his peanut butter. In other words, they're peanut butter and jelly. His name is Ipe Mizuhara. Now, Ohtani is saying that he was actually bailing out this friend slash translator, Ipe, who was actually the one who was gambling. And he actually was just bailing him out because he's such a good friend, and it wasn't him at all. And I'm sitting here saying, really? I mean, he clearly is $700 million is at stake, right? If it were you and I, right, and you were my translator, I would tell you, listen, you got to take the fall for me here. There's $700 million. I'll give you, you know, $50 million. Just take the fall.
Okay, this could go both ways in my mind, right? Because if you have a career as a translator for your best friend, you probably have a lot of downtime. Okay. And you're probably going to get involved in gambling.
Okay.
Okay. Like, I don't think this person with a $700 million contract is even, like, you don't even go down the block of the gamblers. You don't even go to Vegas. You don't even, like, open sports betting sites. You know why? Because you have $700 million and you're not willing to risk it. I feel like
I don't think that's true at all. I think when you have that much money, you're like, what the heck? I may as well gamble some of it. What's the problem? I lose $100 million, I got $600 more.
Yeah, but he knows it's against the rules. It can invalidate his entire contract. Whereas the translator, he seems like the guy that's taking that risk. I think that the baseball player, whose name I cannot say, is just bailing out his BFF. That's what I think is happening. I told you no gambling. We don't eat a dog. We don't bet on a dog.
And we're going to end. I saved this one for the end. There's so much to talk about on this topic. We could literally do an entire cast on this topic. And the topic is something called the Havana Syndrome. Did you ever hear of it?
I did hear of this. It has something to do with the FBI. I know that.
But okay. You are proficient, my friend.
I mean, come on. How would I guess that? It's more than most would know. Havana Syndrome. Right. It has to do with FBI agents and some type of like suspicious illness that they get.
Yes, yes,
but give
yes.
me the rundown.
So it was called Havana Syndrome because it was first talked about from United States workers in Havana who were in the U.S. Embassy in Havana who were complaining about a crazy sickness. And the symptoms were really weird. They felt like a fullness in the head, and then they got nauseous. And one of them lost sight in one eye. Just really bizarre. But it happened to them out of the clear blue. And so there was some talking about, and they dubbed it the Havana Syndrome, and there was a lot of talk about, was there some type of weapon, some sonic weapon that couldn't be seen that was targeting United States employees overseas? And I actually listened to another podcast that took a deep dive into it, and they concluded that Havana Syndrome didn't exist, and it was totally not true. And now 60 Minutes came out with this expose where they're saying, through a lot of investigation, that Havana Syndrome is true, and it's the Russians that are behind it, and they have a weapon, this very advanced weapon that's actually doing this to Americans overseas, FBI agents as well. And they did a whole expose. We're actually going to include the entire bit low resolution in the WhatsApp because it's really long, but it's really crazy and nefarious because all this time I've been reading about Havana syndrome and the thought that they're like, that the Russians have this weapon that's invisible, that they can just shoot people from far, it leaves no traces, and it could completely incapacitate somebody. That's terrifying.
Yeah, and a part of this segment, I believe, discusses the fact that it's just the beginning of this microwave kind of technology being used in weaponry.
Yes.
And that's terrifying.
Terrifying. And, you know, it's sad because you could see, unfortunately, some people on the right, you know, some of the extreme right, they have like this attitude towards Russia, you know, like they're sympathetic towards Russia for whatever reason.
Well,
they're
Tucker sympathetic Carlson, to Putin.
Tucker Carlson, exactly.
I wonder what he's going to say to this 60 Minutes segment.
That's what he's going to say.
That was good.
Thank you. That was on the spot. Yeah, exactly. Tucker Carlson and his ilk, Candace Owens, they're like, I don't want to say they're pro, but they're kind of pro a little bit, right?
Yeah,
they're a little bit
they're,
pro.
They're Russia lovers. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Yes, yes.
You know what I'm saying? Tucker Carlson loves Russia. He loves Putin. He loves Russia. He loves stores in Russia. We've seen it all.
Yes.
And guess what? We Russians love Tucker.
They do.
He is his favorite journalist. Easy.
That's 100% true. It's not even a joke. That is the truth.
Yeah, but that is like terrifying. And I want to think that the Russian powers that be were just like, no. Tucker off limit.
Favorite journalist.
You don't touch Tucker.
We did cover what's coming. And by the way, that just shows how amazing this cast is, doesn't it? We really cover all the important stuff.
The truth of the matter is when you go back and you just look at the arc of what we have like covered, we have covered everything. Not just that, I see stories weeks later.
Yes.
Like big websites and big social media accounts and be like, huh, covered that 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, baby, that's right.
You guys are sleeping.
And we will continue doing that, so make sure you tune in.
And we thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to join the WhatsApp group. You can do that either from the show notes or visit us at kiddishclubpodcast.com. Follow us on X, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to support the cast by visiting buymeacoffee.com/kiddishclub. Show your support for the cast, and until next time, Kiddish Club out.
This episode is copyright Kiddish Club Media.